This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Guardians Weekly on the Cleveland Guardians Radio Network. Guardians Weekly is brought to you by Progressive, helping Guardians fans save hundreds on car insurance.
Everyone, welcome to Guardians Weekly. Jim Rosenhaus along with you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland as we continue to take you through the baseball offseason. Coming up on this week's show, some great news for some of the greatest names in our game came down this week as Gil Hodges, Jim Cott, Minnie Minoso, and Tony Oliva were elected by the Golden Days era committee of the Baseball Hall of Fame. And Bud Fowler and Buck O'Neill were chosen by the Early Baseball Era Committee in voting that took place in Orlando, Florida. All will be honored, along with any selections from the Baseball Writers Association of America ballot, which will be released in the coming weeks. That's in Cooperstown, as always, at the induction ceremonies at the Baseball Hall of Fame in late July. Also elected this week as Ford Frick Award winners to the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's on the media and broadcasting side. Tim Kirkchin, not only from ESPN Now, but a longtime baseball beat writer for several publications. And former Cleveland Indians broadcaster Jack Graney, the legendary Jack Graney, who was the first former player to go behind the mic when he began broadcasting Cleveland games in the early 1930s. Later on in our show, Guardians team historian Jeremy Fedor will shed some light on how modern-day technology and some good old-fashioned public relations assisted with Jack Graney's selection. And Guardians senior VP Bob DiBiasio will reminisce about some of the Golden Era inductees and their Cleveland connections. Bobby D. also will take a look back at the life and times of one of the best closers in Cleveland franchise history, Doug Jones, who recently passed away but won't soon be forgotten. But first, a few reminders. If you are still on the hunt for holiday gift ideas, the Guardians team store at Progressive Field continues on holiday hours, which means this week from 10 to 5 and next week from 10 to 6 each day. Now, Sundays, the team store is open from noon to 5, and on Christmas Eve, the store is open from 10 to 4. But generally, every day leading in to Christmas, and then some more hours available between Christmas and New Year's to get you stocked up on the brand new Guardians gear. On the ticket side, Guardians six packs of tickets begin as low as $99 per pack. And of course, season tickets are available as well. Just head to CleGuardians.com to purchase and secure further information. Glad you found us. You can hear the show each week on Guardians Radio Network affiliate stations, of course. Usually it drops 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock Saturday afternoon. You can also hear it on CleGuardians.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts at Cleveland Guardians Podcasts. Now on to our show, as when we come back, we will hear from Guardians Senior VP Bob DiBiasio. That's next on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
Progressive wants your pets to be their best selves, so we cover them in our auto policy. We created this self-empowerment series just for them.
The smell of bacon fills the air as you chase a tennis ball across a grassy field. You notice a fire hydrant and approach to mark your territory. Your aim is impeccable.
Get coverage for your pets with an auto policy from Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage for cats and dogs included with the purchase of collision coverage and is subject to policy terms.
Welcome back to Guardians Weekly. We're joined now by Guardians Senior Vice President Bob DiBiasio. Always great to catch up with Bobby D as we talk about some of the Hall of Famers who got great news earlier this week and several close to home in terms of past Cleveland franchise history. But Bobby, before we get to that, we wanted to recognize, and this happened a while back, but we haven't had a chance to chat with you, really one of the fun players in franchise history. He was an excellent closer for the then Indians back in the late 80s and early 90s. Doug Jones passed away in late November. He's third on the franchise list for closers in terms of saves. But I know that was a tough one for you in a year that's had some difficult times in terms of players passing away. But I know Doug Jones, when I mention his name to you, it seems like that brings a smile right away.
Absolutely. Obviously, it stings, and it still stings to know that Doug Jones will not be coming to Cleveland to visit in the summertime as an alumni ambassador or connecting with him just on the phone as we would do throughout the summertime. Just a remarkable, witty, fun, just wonderful man. His career, Rosie, was not normal. He was a guy that, you know, he pitched in the big leagues for 16 seasons, seven of them with us from 86 to 91, and then again in 1998. He made his debut in 1982, but then again, he only pitched four games and didn't appear back in the big leagues until 1986 with us. So he really started his Major League Baseball career at the age of 29. And he pitched until, I think it was 2000, at the age of early 40s. I think it was 43 when he ended his career. So not normal trajectory of a baseball player starting almost at 30 and ending in your 40s. Five-time All-Star, three times with us, as you said, third on our all-time saves list. Just a remarkable guy that a whole bunch of teammates we connected on email, text, and phone calls because he meant a lot to so many.
Well, and you look at the way he did it in today's game. Gosh, if you don't throw 100 miles an hour at the back end of the bullpen, you don't get much consideration to close games. But he came in with one of the great changeups of his era. And that was his out pitch, and it worked so well, and it must have been fun to watch on a regular basis. Just, I imagine a lot of hitters went back to the dugout and said that was the most comfortable, unworthy at-bat that they've had all night.
Exactly. You know, the managers he played for, Pat Corrales, Doc Edwards, Johnny Mack, Grover, they would all laugh in one sense because he threw slow, slower, slowest. and that's how he got guys out. And that was the way he approached it. I mean, you know, he's a big guy, big, big hands. I asked him one time if the ability to throw a changeup had something to do with his huge hands. And he said, no, you know, he was a coach in the Milwaukee system and in a number of, and I think the Diamondbacks. And he said, no, you don't need, you know, big hands, big fingers, long fingers to do the circle change, to grip the ball that way, to throw an effective changeup. You just have to have confidence. You have to have guts. You have to understand that all you're trying to do is disrupt the flow of a hitter, the rhythm of a hitter. And part of that is watching a hitter and the swings that he takes and going at spots where he's uncomfortable with slower and slowest. Took a lot of guts to, you know, go out there and face big league hitters and do what he did. And he did it for 16 seasons. Just remarkable.
So you mentioned he broke in with the Indians in 86 at the age of 29. And 88 was that real breakthrough year with the 37 saves, made the All-Star team. And memories that stand out from that season. I know there are a lot, but some more than others.
1988, there's a game that he and I would always talk about, and I think I'd mention it to him that it was what I thought was his greatest game as a member of our franchise. We were at Yankee Stadium late June of 88. I think the Yankees and us were tied record-wise, and we had a big four-game series going in there. And he ends up saving a game that Tom Candiotti got beat up in the first inning, couldn't even get out of the first inning, and we rally back. And he goes and does a 1-2-3 ninth inning, getting Jack Clark and Don Mattingly. I can't remember who the third batter was. And what made it so special is the fact that here's a guy that went from being a spring training invitee to becoming an All-Star in 1988 to owning a major league record for the most consecutive saves. That game at Yankee Stadium was his 14th save in a row, which topped Steve Bedrosian's record that was set the year before. And so when you think about things of that nature, you know, what he went through as a young athlete and then just changing himself into this changeup specialist, saving games, having the guts to do so. And again, going from a spring training invitee to an All-Star to owning a major league record. And one of the things we kidded, we would always have fun with, he finally got a Topps baseball card of himself, and he would always laugh about that. So going to miss him dearly. He's just such a wonderful, wonderful man, and just heartbreaks for Debbie and the family, and just, you know, he was a died of COVID complications, and it hurts.
And we're talking about Doug Jones, the third most saves in franchise history, was with Cleveland back in the late 80s, early 90s, and gosh, Bobby, you talk about those memories, and just looking at the lines throughout the years and how the game has changed. We talk about that changeup being such a key, and you don't see that very often in that role now. 1992, this was with Houston, 80 games, 111 innings. I don't think you'd see too many closers getting that type of activity. But, man, you talk about willing to take the baseball in key spots. That was him.
Absolutely. He was in an All-Star game in the National League. Again, he was a five-time All-Star, three times with us. But one of the years he was in the National League, he actually gave up a base hit in an All-Star game to Charlie Nagy. Charlie Nagy, Tom Kelly's managing the American League All-Star team. Charlie goes out and pitches, I think, a 1-2-3 inning, either the seventh or eighth inning, and comes into the dugout and goes up to Charlie and says, sorry to do this to you, but you got to grab a helmet and a bat. And Charlie's like, what? he goes, I ran out of players. There's guys that went in and showered, and I need you to bat. So Charlie goes up, and Doug Jones is on the mound. And Charlie dribbles one between pitcher's mound and third base and beats it out on Doug Jones. And those two had it a remarkably funny situation there at first base, just laughing as hard as they can to one another. Jonesy's glove over his face and Charlie's hands in his covering his face as he got a base hit in an all-star game off his close friend.
And then Jones came back. 1998, he had been away from the franchise. His last season had been 1991. At the age of 34, you figure, well, that's probably it. And he went to several different clubs before returning in 1998. What was that like when he came back as part of, you know, that stretch where just great teams year after year?
It was so fun to have players who played at Cleveland Stadium that were part of especially the mid to late 80s as we were trying to build. Hank Peters comes back after Dick Jacobs buys the team, and Hank Peters runs the franchise and tabs John Hart and Dan O'Dowd as the two guys along with Hank that were going to, you know, change how we went about the baseball operations in our franchise. It was special that they could see the change in our franchise. And he loved every minute of it. He would laugh, you know, at what our clubhouse and strength and conditioning and training area was compared to, you know, his previous time as a member of our franchise at Cleveland Stadium. So, it was really fun when anyone could come back and enjoy what Progressive Field was all about and how our fans responded, especially the newness of it all in the 90s.
Well, Bobby D, obviously there's sadness, and any time someone passes, it's close to the franchise. But hopefully this has been fun for folks to relive some memories of Doug Jones and his time with the franchise, because it was special, and he'll always be in the record books in to some extent, and that's pretty neat, and thanks a lot for sharing that. And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Hall of Fame, because there were some great announcements with players very close to the Cleveland franchise that were a part of the announcements earlier this week. So we'll step aside, come back with more as Guardians Weekly continues on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
Now, folks, you've waited for this. Don't let it slip by without being a part of it.
Welcome back to Guardians Weekly. Guardians Senior Vice President Bob DiBiasio joining us. Some great memories that we just listened to regarding Doug Jones, who passed away in late November, the longtime franchise closer back in the late 80s, early 90s. And now we switch gears, talk Hall of Fame. And this past week, some announcements made as to who will be going in the Golden Days era and also the early baseball era, as well as the Ford Frick Awards. And several of those who were elected have some Cleveland connections in that golden era, the Golden Days era. Gil Hodges, Jim Cott, Minnie Minoso, and Tony Oliva were elected in the early baseball era. Bud Fowler and Negro Leagues legend Buck O'Neill. And then on the Ford Frick side, Tim Kirkchin, who you see a lot on ESPN now, but a great sports writer for many, many years too. And Jack Graney made it. the former Cleveland Indians announcer when baseball on the radio was just beginning. So some great stuff there, and we'll hear from Jeremy Fedor a little bit later on in the show about Jack Graney going in. But Bobby D, a fun week, and let's start with the Golden Days era. And some of those names, pretty close affiliations with Cleveland, specifically Minnie Minoso, but also I know you got to be friendly with Jim Cott and the other two, Gil Hodges and Tony Oliva, greats of their time for sure.
Yes, Rosie, I wish I would have gotten to know Gil Hodges and Tony Oliva. I certainly enjoy the history of the game of baseball and know who Gil Hodges and his stellar career. Grew up watching Tony Oliva do his thing. Would talk to Richie Rollins, the star from Parma High School, Sandlot star in Cleveland, who played on the same teams with Tony Oliva and the Minnesota Twins. Jim Cott, I got to know in 1987. It was my lone season away from the Cleveland Guardians franchise, 1987. I was the PR chief of the Atlanta Braves. Jim Cott was one of the broadcasters on the Superstation on TBS. So got to know him very, very well. And, you know, here's a guy, think about it, 16 straight gold gloves as a pitcher. It's remarkable just thinking about that. One of the nicest. The way he went after his craft, he would have fit into today's world. Very analytical, very studious. His approach to pitching, just so happy for Mr. Cott. And Minnie Minoso. I got to know Minnie Minoso, Rosie, just from like Equitable old-timer games that used to happen. Back in the day, we used to have him in the 80s, obviously at Cleveland Stadium, and he'd come back and play for the Indians, and it putting him in the lineup, and just a guy that always had a smile on his face. I was 5 years old, something like that. I had two older brothers, you know, and baseball was obviously very large in our family, as was football and basketball. Our father was a coach at Lakewood High School in all three sports. So, you know, with three boys in the families, and to hear my brothers, you know, the outfield of the 59 Cleveland Indians was Jimmy Pearsall or Tito Francona in center, and Rocky Colavito in right, and Minnie Minoso in left. I mean, that's our childhood. That, you know, the name Minnie Minoso. You know, he integrated the Chicago White Sox back in 49, I believe it was. And it was a star for the Chicago White Sox. I think there's a whole lot of people who are so very happy that Minnie is being honored in this manner. His 59 year with the Tribe, he was an all-star. He only spent, I think, 3 years with us, but he made an impact for sure.
On the Fort Frick side of things, before we get to the last guy, because he has the huge association with the franchise, but Tim Kirkjian's going in, and we see him nowadays as someone who's on ESPN, but a long-time newspaper guy, beat reporter for a couple of different clubs, with a Cleveland connection, too.
Timmy Kirkjian and I go back to day one of both of our careers, 1979. And so we've known each other for more than 40 plus years. I don't know if there is anyone more passionate about the game of baseball than Tim Kirkjian. There may be people who might equal his passion for this game, his love for the game of baseball and the history of the game and the nuances of our game, but nobody has more passion. And Timmy started in Texas and then was the beat writer in Baltimore and then went on to do things, obviously, in television at the ESPN. The Baseball Writers Career Excellence Award could not have gone to a more deserving man than Tim Kurkjian. That was another one. You just I sent him a text that just said, "I'm smiling from ear to ear." There'll be a day sometime later, I'll tell you a story about Timmy and I. You know, when the visiting writers would come to town on occasion, I'd take a few of them to lunch on the first day that they came into town, especially when we moved into our brand new building, so that they would have an understanding of what it's all about going into our beautiful new baseball-only ballpark in downtown Cleveland. And there was a time when we decided that we weren't going to eat lunch. We were going to go take batting practice. We're going to throw BP to one another. And we used a certain player's bat. Now, this is back in Cleveland Stadium days. And we went underneath the old bleachers at Cleveland Stadium and threw BP to each other. And the certain player's bat that we used, I broke two of them, and both of them were corked.
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops. And we just, every time we see each other, we mention that certain player's name, and we just laugh and laugh. That certain player's first at bat that night in that game doubled off the right field wall.
Oh, of course he did.
We just looked at each other and smiled in the press box. So that was hilarious. But Timmy, again, just the nicest, as you know, one of the nicest, unassuming, wonderful guys. So just so very happy for him.
Great stuff. And boy, nice week gone by with the announcement of those going into the Hall of Fame and then the Golden Era, the early era, and the Ford Frick side of things for broadcasting and also reporting, things like that. So good stuff. Bobby D, always great to hear from you. And I don't think I'll talk to you on the show between now and Christmas time and New Year's, but Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, as we'll look forward to talking to you in 2022.
Always a treat, Rosie. Take care, sir. Happy holidays.
That's Guardians Senior Vice President Bob DiBiasio. Stay tuned. More to come as Guardians Weekly continues on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
Progressive wants your pets to be their best selves, so we cover them in our auto policy, and we created this self-empowerment series just for them.
You are lying paws up on the sofa. A human caresses the itchy spot behind your left ear. As another human feeds you a slice of cheese, your ancestors are wolves.
Get coverage for your pets with an auto policy from Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage for cats and dogs included with the purchase of collision coverage and is subject to policy terms.
Welcome back to Guardians Weekly. We are joined now by Guardians team historian Jeremy Fedor, who has a great story to tell, as this week, outstanding news for the late Jack Graney, who was elected to Baseball's Hall of Fame, a Ford Frick Award winner for his broadcasting work, a pioneer for the Cleveland Indians back in the early 30s on through the 40s and then early 50s as well. And Jeremy, I know you worked hard to get the word out on what Jack Graney accomplished, especially at his point in time. And for you, when you heard the news that he had gotten in, how satisfying was that to hear?
It's one of those things that you don't, until you see the actual graphic on Twitter or the announcement made, it's just like in your head, you keep playing over like, well, he's up against some really good competition. And, you know, that has to be I'm a native Clevelander, so sometimes you always wait for another shoe to fall. And, you know, to me, it was a slam dunk case. But then again, I'm pretty biased, but he just represents such a wonderful part of Cleveland's storied broadcasting history. I think we just have we're lucky to have a very rich history in the broadcasting field. And, you know, with Graney, on the surface level, I mean, if you don't dig deep, you know, you get the first player turned broadcaster, first batter against Babe Ruth, a lot of these cool, you know, anecdotes. But when you start diving into his, you know, his career, and we touched upon it, like you said, in the previous interview, there's just so much more to his history that makes him, you know, a compelling case, and I don't have the criteria of the Frick Award in front of me, but one of the things I was able to do is, you know, anyone with a Cuyahoga County Library card can access the Plain Dealer's digital archive, so I highly recommend that. And I was able to comb through the years from, you know, his start in the 30s to the 50s, and just all these stories about him, whether it was, you know, recreating broadcast, which, again, I can't imagine the difficulty of a seasoned broadcaster doing something like that, but Graney, who, you know, didn't have the background, the schooling, I guess, in broadcasting, and yet he was still able to do this stuff successfully and, you know, really endear himself to a Cleveland crowd. And you know, the problem with some of these older, kind of like some of our Hall of Famers, is there's just very few people around anymore that can, you know, remember what it was like to listen to Jack. And we only have a handful of recordings. So really trying to flesh out this career of an individual who passed away in the late 70s and who stopped broadcasting, you know, in 1953. So trying to point out that, hey, this was a Canadian guy, you know, fan favorite ball player who played in Cleveland, had all these other, you know, tremendous attributes on the field, whether it was a member of the 20 World Series team or, you know, wearing a uniform number for the first time. But then as the broadcaster who, really, when you read what he did, is no different from, say, you and Hammy in your pregame prep. And, you know, it's fun to see how quickly he was able to pick up on what he needed to do to be a successful ball player and really pave the way for how many former Cleveland ball players are now broadcasters. I mean, there's quite a few. You know, obviously, we just recently lost the great Ray Fossey, but there's just so many players that, you know, followed in his footsteps, especially from the Cleveland start. So it's really, really rewarding to see. And I still have been, you know, going through Twitter and looking at stuff and just, you know, raising my fist in joy for Jack.
Hey, you mentioned all that you were doing and going to the library, maybe a small part of that, maybe a big part of it, and going through old articles and things like that. How far back did you go in terms of when you thought, you know what, he's going to need a little push here, and I need to get some good information into the hands of the right people who are going to be on this committee. How far out did you start with that process?
Yeah, so well, the first time Jack actually going behind the mic, well, it was a news story in the Plain Dealer. So in the 32 season, it made news. It was him and Billy Evans, and you know, it was kind of this unique situation because, again, there hadn't really been this push to have former ball players become broadcasters. So when Jack picked it up, and again, this is in the world where, you know, broadcasting is a new a medium for baseball for fans, and you know, they're in a sense kind of scrambling to figure out what's going to work. So I started right at that beginning because, you know, Jack's playing career is fascinating in and of itself, but that really has no bearing to the point, you know, to a certain extent for this award. So I didn't want to get bogged down too much in that stuff. So, you know, really just going through and, you know, 20 some odd years of history and, you know, even later on to, you know, see how he was even remembered after his broadcasting career by, you know, certain individuals who recalled, you know, his success as a broadcaster and how he maybe have influenced them. And it was a long slog because, you know, his name pops up so many times and he was doing so many different broadcasting things outside of baseball. And, you know, so just seeing all that was, I think, really created this compelling story of this guy that, again, had no background in it, but ran with it and became a fan favorite. And again, going back to that point, you know, he was a fan favorite, but a lot of those fans are no longer with us. So really trying to drive that point home that, hey, this was a significant individual in the history of broadcasting in Cleveland. And, you know, sometimes I think when you compare Cleveland to New York and Chicago, we're like that little brother that sometimes gets ignored. So to see, again, Jack get selected and again, getting that information to the voters, it helps because, you know, me in particular, I love the details and, you know, getting into all that stuff. But to expect, you know, all these guys to be looking at an article from June of 1946 or something is, you know, it's a lot to ask. I mean, you kind of do with what you got in front of you. And I thought, well, you know, if we can make the case and compile and really bullet point and show what a strong case Jack had, you know, I thought, hey, let's take our shot, because who knows if Jack will be up again for it. I think this was his third time nominated for the award, and he had fallen short the previous two times. So I didn't know much, you know, longer he had left on the ballot. And I figured, hey, we're going to do it. Let's do it right. Let's get it all out there and see what happens.
Well, it happened successfully. And obviously with him passing away, he's not able to enjoy that. But his family, I know you had a chance to visit with his granddaughter. And can you share some of that exchange and their feelings?
You know, what's actually kind of really unfortunate is Granny's daughter, she lived to be in her 90s, just recently passed away the other year. So, you know, I know she had been lobbying for him to win the award. And one of those sad cases where she wasn't able to be around for the announcement. But I know the family, I was, you know, with social media today, I was able to connect with Jack's only granddaughter. Jack had a son as well, but he ended up dying in a World War II plane accident. So he had one daughter and one granddaughter. And so I've been able to connect with her. I know they're over the moon about it. And, you know, who wouldn't be if your ancestor got an award from the Baseball Hall of Fame? I mean, you know, the excitement I feel, I'm sure, is tenfold for them and being a relative. So it's really exciting. You know, we're hoping to maybe do some during the season to recognize Jack and his accomplishments, and you know, still just being a day off the news, you know, the dust hasn't settled yet, but there's gonna be ways hopefully to get out more of the history. And you know, for people that love it or people that are sort of interested in it, you know, we'll get it out there, and hopefully everyone else learns to appreciate the history that is Jack Graney's broadcasting career.
Well, Jeremy, great work. I know it took a while and was very much detail-oriented, but it pays off in the end as one of the broadcasting pioneers, Jack Graney, elected to Baseball's Hall of Fame earlier this week. Jeremy, thanks so much for coming by. Appreciate it.
Oh, always happy to talk.
That is Guardians team historian Jeremy Fedor. Great work by Jeremy to assist with the election of Jack Graney, who really didn't need help, but sometimes those on the decision-making side need to be made aware of the accomplishments of those up for consideration for the Hall of Fame, and Jeremy did a great job in that regard. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks to Brian Motze, as always, for all of his help. This is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Guardians Weekly on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
Guardians Weekly has been brought to you by Progressive, helping Guardians fans save hundreds on car insurance.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.